I would like to ask a question to get us started and to give us a little bit of time to facilitate the question collections here. I must say, though, that your example about serving the families in Orlando is really poignant, Vince. Thank you for that. It reminds me of a story that I once heard from Steve Brown, in which there was a tragic murder of a young lady who was a stripper. And the church down the block from this strip club found out about what happened. And there was a group of ladies who used to meet, and all of whom were over 60, 70 years of age. And they decided, as they prayed, they wanted to reach out to this community, the strip club. So they decided to get together a care package. It was one of these, you know, lovely packages of flowers and cookies and all the rest. And three of these ladies, all of whom look like Aunt B from the Andy Griffith Show, walk into this strip club. And, of course, you know, they're not looking at the strippers anymore. They're looking at Aunt B walking across the room. And then one of them puts the package onto the bar. And she says, "We heard about your friend and we're sorry. And we want you to know that we love you and we're here to serve you." And that started a relationship with some of these women who visited the church. And in the course of that interaction, they were able to serve them and express the love of Christ and see God extend salvation. So thank you, Vince, for that exhortation. We need to do just that. Okay. You have broadened our vision in understanding the creation mandate and the fact that that is in continuity with the Great Commission. I wonder if you could reflect for us on the question of how the proclamation of Christ factors into the relationship of the creation mandate and the Great Commission, and then secondly, how maybe some suggestions for how that can find expression in our ministries, because we recognize that the message of the cross is offensive to the world, and so how do we navigate that?
Okay. Thank you for that question, Chris. So, Jesus comes announcing a kingdom. So when we're talking about the proclamation of Christ, we're talking about really the proclamation of the kingdom of God. And Christ is the king of that kingdom. So when we're proclaiming that, then what is it, we're asking the question, what does it mean to proclaim that with Christ the kingdom has come? And when we're making that proclamation, then yes, it includes certainly how do I participate in the kingdom of God? And so when we talk about a person becoming rightly related to God through Jesus Christ, offering people, you know, eternal life, forgiveness of their sins, that's part of it. But what's also part of it is then, okay, now that you have that relationship, what does it mean to live as someone who's a citizen of that kingdom? To live as a citizen of that kingdom is not only to live as a person who's thinking about the forgiveness of sins and having eternal life. That's certainly part of it. Or a person who becomes particularly pious in their character. All important. I mean, you will never hear me say the character development is not important. Because it's not as if we're overrun with, like, people with so much great character in our society that we're like, okay, enough of all that character development. We need that. But when a person is living in the kingdom, we're thinking about that means the world under the reign of God. Then how do human beings live in God's world under the reign of God? So then we start asking, how do I participate in that world? As if the reign of God has come fully. And we're in this now and not yet space. It's inaugurated by the incarnation. And it will be fulfilled when the eschaton comes. In the meantime, how do we live in here? Well, we ask, how do I, this is a good way to think about it, how do I live after the benediction is given until the next invocation on the next Sunday? What do I do with my life between benediction and invocation? All those hours of the week. Because most people probably aren't leading a Bible study all those hours of the week. Most people aren't doing, certain kinds of evangelism all those hours of the week. I mean, and even if they regularly practice, do evangelism every week, let's say, still most of their hours is not going to be lived doing that. So then what should they do? Well, really, I say you start asking, how does every area of life get expressed as a reality of God's kingdom? Which isn't just a matter of my character, but it's also, how should this world operate? This world of politics, this world of education, this world of law, this world of business, this world of art, and on it goes. And so I ask, what does it mean to live in those domains with fidelity to God? Which really encourages us actually to say, let me be imaginative here. Let me try out what this might look like. It's okay if you try something and it doesn't work. Try something else. But what we started thinking about, okay, fidelity to God in His world might look like X, Y, or Z, depending upon which domain we're in. If we're specifically talking about politics, then one of the things I ask is, all right, well, what's the political reality of the world, my local world? Because depending upon the country you live in, that will either provide greater space or less space for being a political actor, right? In other words, I can put it this way. If you live in North Korea, I don't care if you have the most transformative view of society. You will be like an Anabaptist, okay? You will be like a person whose community life together models another social reality. That will be pretty much the only environment where you can model that. Because you're in a totalitarian state, it doesn't allow it. If you're in a country like ours, we ask, what are the various ways, that I can understand how life is stewarded in our society politically? And what are the ways that I can participate as a citizen? Because this is a country where, being a citizen, you can participate. For some people, that will mean running for office. Not for most people. But for some people, it will. Right? For people, it means voting. Or it means being informed about what you're voting about. It means thinking about writing to your congressman, or writing to your governor. All those types of things. And here's something that was something interesting I learned this year. If 10 people write to a senator, right, they think that something big is happening. If 10 people write about the same thing. Because most people don't write to government officials. People say it all the time. Write to us, they say. People say, oh, maybe. And they think other people do it. But if people actually do it, they go, oh, people care about this. So, all that to say that's an example of that kind of participation in a society like ours. I mean, nobody's writing a letter, you could write a letter to the dictator of North Korea if you want to, but that would be an exercise in futility. It looks like you have another question. All right.
Yeah. Okay, this one's a bit lengthy.
Okay.
Many of my friends would
Is this water for me?
It is for you. Please.
Oh,
yes, help yourself.
You.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't tell you that. Many of my friends would not vote in 2012 because they didn't want to vote for the lesser of two evils. We're always voting for the lesser of two evils. How could you encourage these people to go ahead and vote? Then in parentheses, they brought up that they could not vote against their conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. To which I would say, if you knew everything that either person held, at some point you're voting against your conscience. So that, to me, that's great in a world where whoever you vote for, of course, completely agrees with you about everything. But if they don't, then yes, there's going to be some tension with your conscience because there's something that they're going to do that you do not agree with. And truth be told, whoever gets in office will definitely do something like that. Because the fact is that you can't do politics in a kind of, I'm only voting for somebody who's completely pure, who agrees with everything I agree with and my ideas. One of the reasons why Congress has such a poor approval rating right now is that you had liberals and conservatives who got elected, many of them, who basically ran on, I'm not compromising with anybody. You know what happens when that happens? Nothing. Right. And you know what happens when nothing happens? Congress has a really low approval rating. Because you can't do politics if you don't work with people who aren't like you. And you have to say, okay, what little incremental thing can we agree on and at least start there? It's the way it works. Right? Because you're dealing with the public domain. So what I would say first to those people also is not just that your conscience is going to be, violated by whoever you vote for. It is also, as I said earlier, there's a lot more in the ballot than just who's going to be president. Is that the only thing that goes on in governance in the United States of America? Again, if you're voting for a monarch, fine. If you're not voting for a monarch, which you aren't, then I would say, even if you are not going to vote, if you leave that blank, the other things are probably important enough for you to show up.
That's good. That's good. What is the goal toward which redeemed people should steward their cultures, given that a utopia is not possible in a fallen world?
Sure. Okay, I'm going to take that. I'm going to give an extreme version of that. If you interpret 2 Peter 3, the latter part of 2 Peter 3, where it talks about everything being burned away, etc. Now, we can debate what being burned away means, but some interpretations of it means everything's going to get burned up and judgment's going to come. And then for some people, God's going to blow up everything and make a new one. For some people, he's going to burn away everything and then, start new with that surface, whatever it is, whatever the case is. What that text actually says is, because you know judgment is coming, then what kind of people should you be? Right? You ought to be God's holy people, which I've just said is being really human. Which means, even if you have the most pessimistic eschatology, your responsibility as a human being is to be a participant in God's world. To be a culture creator in a way. Right? A culture maker, as Andy Crouch would say. So, the options are not just, I completely transform society, or I check out and run away while it's all, while the ground is opening up and swallowing everything up, right? It's not, just one of those two options. It's really, mostly, much more mundane things. So because it's more mundane, because most of politics is actually very unsexy, because of that, I would say, at the very least, the goal of politics is how do we manage life together so that we're making, life for the common good, at least a little bit better. I mean, if it's a lot better, that's fantastic. But even a little bit better. Exhibit A, okay? Public education. Public education as a public good is very important. Because if you have people that are better educated, those people who are better educated, especially at an earlier age, those people who are better educated are going to be better contributors to society. One of the fundamental ways to have a better society is to have, between 0 and 6, to have greater attention to the flourishing of children in poorer circumstances. And so public commitments to that will lead to, and of course there's lots of different ways people may think about how you get there, but thinking together about how to do that. That is something that has, in terms of a long-term goal, has great potential for society being better. So the point is not to try to bring in the kingdom. I'm not a post-millennialist in my eschatology, right? Post-millennialist, Jesus comes back after this thing called the millennium, Revelation 20. Some post-millennialists believe that the responsibility of Christians is to make the kingdom happen, to put it in place. That is not what I'm saying. I am saying that what we do does reflect the kingdom that is coming, rather than feeling like we have to establish it. And in that reflecting, we're trying to do things that at least are providing some incremental, more incremental expressions of flourishing. Mm-hmm. Is that?
That's very helpful. So okay. We're not succumbing to the pessimism.
Correct.
Of an over-optimistic, of a particularly negative eschatology.
Right. Yes.
And likewise, we're not becoming overly optimistic.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so let's shoot for the middle with this question then. How do we get the Christian message across to the public and overcome the anti-Christian mindset? And then there's three particular contexts in which we do that. In mainstream media, Hollywood and entertainment, and the educational establishment.
Right, okay. With the last, well, with each one of them, one of the things to reckon with is this. If you withdraw from society for over half a century, right, why would you ever be surprised at the fact that people are doing things that you don't like? And why would you think that because you got involved 30 or 40 years later that all of a sudden you're going to reverse the momentum? Right? So one, I say, is have a longer view of things. Second, encourage the people in your congregations who are artistic, or people who are leaders, who are educated, people in finance, I mean, all these different areas, encourage those people to actually develop those abilities that God's given them and to serve God with those abilities, which means some people need to be in Wall Street. Some people need to be in Hollywood. Some people need to be trying to figure out this thing called public education. And some people need to be, in the mainstream media. I mean, another friend of mine works for CNN. Very committed Christian. We need people who are there, first of all. A lot of times people have been told, stay away. Stay away. And a lot of times the reason people are told to stay away, it winds up being sort of like a sort of selective idea that a particular thing is too great a temptation for human beings. To which I always want to ask, you realize that all those temptations you're talking about, they show up everywhere. So why just those domains? I mean, if you don't like them, okay. Just say I don't like them. Right? But don't say nobody should be involved in there. I mean, one of the greatest things I think we have to do in the church, for example, talking about Hollywood, we need to do a better job letting artistic people be artistic people. Rather than saying, because I don't immediately understand you, the way you think as an artist, I will only try to understand you if everything you do, if you're a painter, everything you do has a cross in it, or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what, for some artists, that might be what they want to do, but there's lots of different things that may be part of their artistic vision. Walk with them through their artistic vision, which doesn't mean that you never critique anything. But it's not just all critique. You're helping people learn to steward their gifts, talents, and abilities. Just like if you have a person who's a great leader, a person who's a great leader needs to learn how to lead well and to also to be aware that when you lead well, that you can become unwittingly subject to that ability to lead well. And when you look in the mirror, all of a sudden your head's bigger every day. And everybody else sees your head is bigger, but you don't see that your head is bigger. Right? You need people in your life to help you lead well before you become a tyrant. Right? So with any gifts, we need to help people to steward them, to learn to use them, to develop their imagination with them. And I think helping people to do that, then in these various domains, we have more people who participate in there, in those domains. Because sometimes when Christians get to those domains, they've never been really helped to think about how to operate as a Christian in those domains besides just hoping to have a Bible study at some point. How about asking how you operate in the whole of the domain itself? Yes. How you bring contributions. How you can be a change agent in terms of how the whole system operates.
Yes.
Etc.
Yes. Yes. Very helpful. I figure about 10 more minutes. Got just a few more questions here. Increasingly, I find the language terminology of the Benedict option appearing in conversations, and maybe others have read that as well. I wonder, Vince, if you could offer a definition and some reflection on whether it offers us any benefits.
First, a survey, shall we? Who has heard of the Benedict option? Wait. Can I see your hands up high just so I can... It's four. Five. Okay. All right. So there is a columnist named Rod Dreher who proposed, I think it was after the Obergefell decision that he proposed this, that Christians should think about what's called the Benedict option, which is named after St. Benedict. And the point is that Christians focus on learning more about their identities, about what it is to be Christian, by focusing on, giving a lot of attention to, the development of their actual Christian community. Some people interpreted that to mean that he meant withdrawing from society. He did not, but it did to some people sound like a retreat. The most generous way to put it is he wants people to at the very least understand what they're supposed to be if they are Christians. And then at least to in their communities know what it means to operate as Christians within their own communities. And that in some ways, I think this is probably what made some people nervous, in some ways it operates as a refuge for people. And certainly it is an option that is less concerned about trying to have the impact of Christian views on various dimensions of society. You more focus on getting things right in your own Christian community than in getting things right in society. To which I would say, it's always great to have a more deeply articulated and understood, Christian identity. What I would also say, though, is the Benedict option is probably a luxury if you're a certain kind of Christian. There's some people, they can't afford that. They've got to be involved in public, right? I mean, I would love for Rod Dreher to go into a black church and talk about that. Mm. And just see what the response is. Mm. It's like, okay, you tell me how the Benedict option is going to work for African Americans caring about mass incarceration. Not just African Americans, but certainly largely African Americans, Latinos, etc. Okay, the Benedict option is not going to help you address the concerns about mass incarceration. It's not going to do everything that we need to address all the different ways that we deal with the issues of race. So, to me, it's like, it's a great option if you're kind of middle class and white. Because you can kind of step away and say, well, kind of like have my little refuge over here. It's like, well, the other people, they don't have that refuge.
Yeah.
And if they're going to actually just participate in society as actual citizens, then they've got to, if you will, politically agitate for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So they've got to have public policies that change things. If you're going to do something different about public education, because everybody's not in a situation where you can either homeschool, send your kids to Christian school, or you have good public schools. And because there are people that, I mean, let's talk about invisible people. Rural Appalachia. If you're in rural Appalachia, okay, how do you improve education in rural Appalachia? If you take the Benedict option. You're going to have a hard time. So what I would say is that I think there are dimensions of it. I can understand why they're helpful. But in some ways, it's a province of privilege.
Let's remember that next time we read the Benedict Option.
There's a good article by Carl Truman in the most recent First Things that Chris pointed out to me, where he was basically saying to people, this is why it's not about withdrawing from society the way that people think it is. So I think it's very helpful. But both Dreher and Truman are also people who are more on the pessimistic side of things.
Yeah.
About, well, I just don't think that things are going to get that much better, etc. And at one level, my response is, well, whatever they're going to get, they're not going to get anything like being a Christian, you know, in the second or third century.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to take a lot for that to happen.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity to recalibrate public expectation.
Yes. This is a practical question. Rather than using mainstream media, what are some resources available to understand more thoroughly the candidates and issues that we will face on the upcoming ballot?
If you want to understand the candidates and issues, go to the Election Commission. Right? I mean, find out what's on the ballot. And then I would say go to the websites and just get the information direct.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to the candidates' websites themselves. That's the best place.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll be very happy to tell you what they want to do, you know, what their platform is, what they think is good for the town, the state, or the country, depending upon what office a person's running for. But also, if there are judges being elected, you know, find out who these people are.
Mm-hmm. So. All right, one more. This is a lob ball. This is a gift to you.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that it was a really hard one. Okay.
No, you'll like this. If Abraham Kuyper were alive today, what would he say about the upcoming election? Of all people, you will know, Vince.
You know, Abraham. Oh, wait. Okay. Another survey. Who is familiar with Abraham Kuyper? Kuyper. There's one, there's two. All right. So Abraham Kuyper lived 1837 to 1920. He was Prime Minister of the Netherlands from 1901 to 1905. He was literally a Renaissance man. He helped found a university. He was the editor of a weekly paper and a daily paper. He started out as a minister. He wound up being in politics. He stepped away from being officially in the ministry. He was still involved in his denomination. But then when he went into politics, he wasn't officially a minister. He wrote, his bibliography goes to, I think, 228 items. He was a living example of a public Christian, but also a person deeply pious. So he wrote lots of devotionals. He was also, I'm at the stage where I can say this now because I'm past my protect Kuyper in all circumstances mode. He was also one of those people who was subject to his gifts, who was a great man, but couldn't always steward his greatness well. But you cannot escape that he was, the way Nick Wolterstorff puts it, an intuitive genius. Jim Bratt puts it, an incredible organizer. Just very, very perceptive, and he wrote and he produced a lot. But he was also sometimes difficult to deal with, right? All that said, his picture's in my office, okay? So I feel like I can say that, and it's not going anywhere. It's not for dart practice, okay? I have much admiration for Kuyper. I've been to the Netherlands 9 times. Always looking for a way to get back. Kuyper, he would certainly not say don't vote, but I think he would, I think, want to encourage people probably to look for a third option. But, I mean, I would say particularly because of the way things operate in the Netherlands. Given what we have, I cannot see him telling people to opt out. One of the ways to think about what Kuyper operated was he wanted to encourage Christians when they were thinking about stepping away from society, he wanted them to understand, no, you need to be publicly involved. It's proper to you to be publicly involved. But also, when people were publicly involved, he wanted to make sure that people also remembered who they were as Christians. So sometimes that meant distinct Christian institutions. The way it wound up working out in the Netherlands, you had actual Christian political party that he was a part of. So I think he wouldn't hesitate to tell some people, well, think about if there are enough of you and if you have enough organization, are there things that you can do as groups of Christians to address things locally as well as nationally? Because it's very much about the local as well as the national. But what he would never tell anybody to check out. He'd say, be in public, remember who you are.
Excellent. So. Excellent. Let's please thank Vince.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.